Shine against you, the nigger shine your light, and the nigger put you in the shine of the whole part. Keep
jar.
Shine Vishnu part, but among the pretty good article charges of the Shishimar, the Mangu Shilva, please sit down the status of the Gosami Shilva, but that would keep
jar.
Nam the Kuriva is to win the key.
Jar.
This can't be the found church, the probe, but key, the one church, the one church, the one church, Vemjigo Shikrishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakti Vindaki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shankun Radha Kundiki Yodanki Shri Vindavana Muttara Danki Shri Navidhi Mayapur Danki Shri Vindavana Puri Danki Gungamayi Jumunamayi Bhakti Vindaki Shri Guptam Puraki Divine Grace Shri Bhakti Vindanti Shami Shri Dha Prabhupada Ki Shri Vindavana Bhakti Vindaki Shri Vindavana Bhakti Vindaki
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna.
All glories and glories to Sri Sri Guru and Guranga.
Jai, all glories to Sri Prabhupada.
All glories to Sri Prabhupada. So, you know where we left off?
Yes. On page, probably, I guess it would be 95 in your book. We're at. Well, it depends on the book. Mine's 96, some are 96, some are 95. So then it would be... we were comparing the questions?
Yeah.
We got down to the third sub-question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a price start?
Mm-hmm.
I'll start the glass because I wasn't here last time. So this is section 533?
Yes.
So, just to bring you up to date, as you may recall in the previous chapter 4, Maharaj Parikshit asked three questions. And Shukadev Goswami, instead of answering these questions directly, he referred to a discussion between Narada Muni and Lord Brahma. So, in this part of the study guide, we're just showing you how Narada's questions match up. Of course, there was a main question that Narada Muni asked. That's the question 34. And we can say that all three of Parikshit Maharaj's questions kind of collapse into this one. And that was just to remind you, please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. This is very significant because this is basically what Canto 2 is all about. Basically, you want to reduce Canto 2 to one, the whole Canto 2 to one statement. It is distinguishing the individual soul from the supersoul. That's why you have such chapters as the Lord in the heart and so on and so forth. So, Parikshit Maharaj's questions, they match up to three, what we're calling, sub-questions. Three questions that expand out of this one question that Narada Muni asked. So, today we're looking at the third and last of these sub-questions, and this is starting with section 533. Comparison of Narada's third sub-question with Parikshit's third of three questions in the previous chapter. So, 5331. Narada's sub-question number 3. Yet we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. When we think of your great austerities in perfect discipline, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation. And hopefully everyone recalls that Narada Muni began, you can say he began asking these questions sort of on the assumption that Brahma is the creator. But then he's putting these questions, although everyone accepts you as the creator, and this is one reason he gives, you perform great austerities in order to get the power to create. So doesn't that mean that there's someone greater than you? So he wants these doubts clarified. And now, in section 5.3.3.2, we compare the question Narada just asked with the question of Parikshit Maharaj, his third question, which is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Whether he alone acts with the modes of material nature, or simultaneously expands in many forms, or expands consecutively to direct the modes of nature. You may recall early in this chapter we showed how this this is not really a question, but we showed how it could be rephrased so that it sounds more like a question. But this is actually considered by the acharyas to be a question. These are different alternatives. Whether we should say the Supreme Lord is simply one over the whole creation, or whether he's acting by himself but with the three modes of nature, or whether he expands himself consecutively to direct the three modes of nature. You see, these are actually three alternatives. So this note here is rather important in understanding the relationship between Narada's questions and Parikshit's question, these third questions. As explained in the note to this verse in the previous chapter study, in fact, this is a question about how the Lord, from the supreme position of his oneness without a second, yet acts through many expansions and incarnations. Brahma is the Lord's incarnation as Rajoguna avatar. So, just as Narada wonders about the one supreme being above Brahma, similarly Parikshit wonders about powerful subordinates of the Lord below him. You see this? It's actually the same question, but just from a different perspective. That Maharaj Parikshit is accepting that there is one Supreme Lord. But he's just wondering, how does he engage in the activities of creation? And one of the options, or one of the possibilities, is that he may expand himself into avatars who actually manage the modes. And that right away brings up the question of Lord Brahma and also Lord Shiva. You see? So you can say Parikshit is looking from top down, whereas Narada Muni is kind of looking from Brahma up. You see? But actually, the two questions are pretty much the same. So,
you know, Sam, just on that, the show would be that Parikshit knows Krishna is the supreme, and hope there it starts from there and go down, but Narada is actually thinking Brahma is the supreme, but getting doubts, so then wondering if there's something up.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're both starting with what they know of as the supreme.
Right. And that's very appropriate because, you know, most of the religions of the world today, the major religions, their conception of God is primarily centered around his being the creator. Hmm. You see. So, but Bhagavatam is actually teaching us that he's much, much more.
The maintenance actually is more brought out.
Yeah. He's the maintainer of repeated creation and destruction. Mm-hmm. So Vishnu is actually, although within the universe, it is, you know, like in India they talk about the Trimurti, there's Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, but Bhagavatam takes us beyond that, that the Brahma, the Vishnu on Chirudakshay Vishnu on Svetadvipa planet. This is all actually called Satyaloka, by the way. Brahmaloka, Svetadvipa, and Kailash. I've seen where Srila Prabhupada has counted them all as the Satyaloka. All of them belong to that
Satyaloka
position.
Just like Bhur Mandala includes all the different islands.
Yeah. Okay. So, so if you just leave it at that, you know, then people are more concerned with who is the creator. But Bhagavatam takes us beyond that and shows that, because actually most of these Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they're just different permutations of the same basic, we'd have to say, misconception. One misconception is that time is linear. Time goes in a straight line from a beginning to an end. Whereas the Vedic conception of time is, of course, circular. So there's a creation, there's a maintenance, there's a destruction, there's a recreation. It just goes on. And so that in itself, that cycle, must be maintained. You see? That immediately calls into question, well, who's maintaining this cycle? You see? So then you have, that's why we've spent so much time with the Chaturvyuha, because actually it is Vasudev, Lord Vasudev, who is the maintainer of that whole cycle. Mm-hmm. By being the hub of it. Mm-hmm. The hub is actually not really doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's just there.
But without it.
Being the center. But if he wasn't there, then the whole thing couldn't turn. And Sankarshan, Pradumna, Anuruddha, then they're the powers that are making everything turn. So that's rather interesting. Oh, and then we have here, where were we? Second question. I kind of lost my place.
You
5:33. Now we're on 5:4.
5:4.
Oh no! Oh, now we're coming to answers. Oh yes. Okay. So specific answers. We went through the questions, comparing the questions. Now we're going to look at the answers that Brahma gives, because this is what Shukadev does. He simply refers to Parikshit Maharaj to Brahma's answers to Narada. So we want to see now how these match up, the answers Brahma gives to the questions of both Narada and Parikshit Maharaj. So, specific answers to Narada's principal question and his three sub-questions. Ergo, these are also the answers to Maharaj Parikshit's three questions of the previous chapter. So the specific answer to Narada's principal question, please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the super soul. What we're saying is that Parikshit's three questions, they collapse into this one. They can be, yes, they're just merged into this one. Because the questions that Narada asks after that, they match up with the questions that Parikshit asked. So this is sort of the sutra that contains all these other questions. So, in answer to this, the truth of the the transcendental knowledge that directs one to the truth of the individual soul and super soul. So the answer is in verse 2:5:17, and there's a note that in this verse Brahma reveals that his transcendental realization is inspired by the super soul. The truth that Brahma is created, the truth is that Brahma is created and the Lord is the creator. So this applies to all jivas in this cosmic manifestation, that the Lord, of course the jiva, the soul himself is not created, but the bodies that we have, they're created, and we are getting inspiration from within how to use these bodies according to our karma. So I won't read the Sanskrit, just the translation. Inspired by him only, by the Supersoul. Inspired by the Supersoul only, I discover what is already created by him, Narayan, under his vision as the all-pervading Supersoul. And I also am created by him only. Next we go to the specific answer to Narada's first sub-question. Please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? So 2:5:18, and there's a note. Brahma states that the symptoms of the manifest world are three: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Their fundament, or what is beneath these three, the one principle beneath these three, is the pure spiritual form of the Lord. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the world are the natural result of his acceptance of the material modes as his energy. And so, Brahma answers, the Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities, yet, for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts, through his external energy, the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, Nimesha, this question is further answered in the next chapter. This is important because you'll see I quote Prabhupada's purport. Bhagavatam 2:6:31, the purport opens with Srila Prabhupada stating the question put by Narada before Brahma concerning the sustenance of the material creation is thus answered. So here Prabhupada's purport is indicating that this question is answered in the next chapter in verse 31. But then I point out, compare these two verses, particularly the phrase used here, sthiti sarga nirodishu grihita maya vibho, with the phrase in verse 31 in the next chapter, grihita mayru guna sarvadava guna svataha. You see the language is very similar, because the two verses are actually saying the same thing. So, in other words, the question is answered here too, and is also answered in the next chapter. Then, a specific answer to Narada's second sub-question, my dear father, what is the source of your knowledge, under whose protection are you standing, and under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy? So I believe here we have a... three. Maybe four. Or five. I don't know. Anyway, a number of verses to answer this question. Brahma says in this verse that his knowledge and creative potency emanate from the Lord as his personal effulgence. So translation, I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyoti. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the permanent, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. So in other words, Brahma is saying, my power to create is simply a reflection of the Lord's original creative power. Yeah, then another note, Brahma pronounces the person deluded, who cannot see beyond the demigod of creation to the Supreme Lord, who is the real supreme controller. Brahma works under his protection only. The translation is, I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna Vasudev, the supreme personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the supreme controller. Then next, verse 14, in this verse Brahma declares the energy, elements, and conditioned identities of the living entities within the creation to be parts and parcels of the one supreme Lord. The five elementary, this is Lord Brahma speaking, the five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof, set up by eternal time, and the intuition or nature of the individual living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudev, and in truth, there is no other value in them. So that's quite important. Without Krishna, without Vasudev, there is no value for this creation at all. Unless, that's another very important lesson of Canto 2. Is that's why, like Maharaji, she said she finds this chapter so difficult, because it goes into such detail, elaborate detail, to connect all the constituents of creation, the whole unfolding of creation, back to Krishna. And so, yeah, very often devotees read this canto, turning page by page and realizing that they've forgotten what's on the previous page they just read.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that's why we have this type of course, to try to focus your attention on these details, because they are very important. We may not be able to appreciate their importance, but we have to live in this world, we have to live in this creation. And the real test of Krishna consciousness is to be able to connect everything we experience with Krishna. There are so many things happening in our own lives, in the lives of persons around us, in the world in general, that can cause us to come under the modes of nature. And that means we forget Krishna. Just like last night I was seeing the former Vice President of the United States, Al Gore, makes presentations on how the world's only got about 50 years before there's going to be some very major disasters. One of the things he showed was that the polar ice caps in Greenland, all the ice up there is being melted away by the sun. And then he shows what will happen. He shows the Bay of Bengal, specifically Calcutta. And he shows the water coming up. Now, I couldn't see on the map where Mayapur is, but I hope it means that well, the Bay of Bengal will be starting there. We'll be right on the edge. But it does go up quite a bit. It means the whole of Calcutta will be flooded, and regions north of Calcutta will just, because he says he was saying how the whole ocean of the earth will raise 20 feet if all this ice, I think he said
20 feet.
Yeah,
because we're sitting at the 9.6 meter above sea level.
Uh oh.
No, that's meters.
9.6 meters. Okay.
Yeah, so that means 27 feet. So we'll still be 10 feet above the...
But we'll be pretty close to the ocean.
We'll be definitely closer to the Bay of Bengal.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's good. Chaitanya's mercy.
But we're okay.
But anyway, according to the maps he was showing, there's going to be some very, very... Some big heads of state are saying, they're even saying now, we're going to have to redraw the map of the whole world because so much is going to be flooded. And it was a very serious presentation. Of course, one can say this is all mundane science, but nonetheless, so many sinful activities are being committed, including the rape of the earth in the name of industrial production and so on. So there has to be a reaction. So however it comes, it's going to be quite disastrous. Unless the people become, en masse, become serious about Krishna consciousness. We'll have to see. So why don't you continue, Maharaj? I've got some Tulsi in my throat. It's hard to talk now.
Because they say it's astringent. Tulsi is astringent, so she closes the throat.
Well, Tulsi always has this effect on my throat.
It does the same thing. The fun is they always give you one before you start.
Yeah.
And then when you start singing, you can't sing. Okay, 543. No? Specific answer to Narada's second sub-question. My dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy? So then, that's 2511. Brahma says in this verse that his knowledge and creative potency emanate from the Lord as his personal effulgence. Translation, I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyoti.
Oh, I think we already read that.
Sure?
Yeah, the stars in it.
Oh,
like
okay.
Like the sun and...
544.
Oh, okay, all the way. Specific answer to Narada's third sub-question. Yet we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you when we think of your great austerities in perfect discipline, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation. Brahma says that the modes of nature cover the spiritual perception of the living entities. The transcendental Supreme Lord, who is the real controller of all living entities, including Brahma himself, exists beyond these modes. Translation. O Brahma, O Brahmana Narada, the superseer, the transcendental Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above mentioned three modes of nature, but he is the controller of everyone, including me. He adds here that as the demigods of creation, he has no independence, for the only independent one is the Supreme Lord. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, thus creates, by his own potency, eternal time, the fate of all living entities, and their particular nature for which they were created. And he again merges them independently. See, you also have, just like we had before, is this dual vision, either look, starting with Krishna and going down, or starting down and going up. Either way is, you know, correct, because they are both centered on the Lord. One is starting from there and seeing everything in relation. The other is seeing everything and then coming to the conclusion. But in here we notice that he covers the spiritual perception of the living entities. That means the spiritual perception exists. Right? It's not that it has to be created, but it's covered, because that's the natural perception of the living entity. One may ask, why is that covered? But that's because we desire it to be. Right? Many times we'll make it, oh, why did Krishna create us this way? He could have made us all Krishna. No, he did make you all Krishna conscious. But we have the tendency that wanting to be God, then God's already there, right? See, there's it's an interesting phenomena. It's a male phenomena that if there is something to be enjoyed, then if there's one masculine entity with it, generally, unless they think they're more powerful or something, but otherwise they will step aside if someone else is there. Does that make sense? Like there's, let's say, there's a girl, and if one man finds out another man is with her, then he'll just drop it. He'll move. Does that make sense? It's just the nature, the masculine nature, because it means it's already being enjoyed, so there's nothing there. So when the living entity wants to enjoy Krishna's energy, he's the masculine. So then he can't step aside because he's everything. So therefore he covers our perception so we don't see him. Does that make sense? So then you have only one male dealing with his energy. Does that make sense? So it's in that, because Krishna says he reciprocates how we approach him. So we want to be the male, so then he reciprocates by hiding himself so that we can be comfortable. Does that make sense? Because one male can't be comfortable enjoying if there's another male present. Does that make sense? So we'll be comfortable, because he won't be uncomfortable. So we'll be comfortable, therefore he's covered. Right? Because one may say no, but then he might be upset or disturbed or jealous because one male is there and he's also there because he's the seer. But him it's not. It's still two females. You know what I'm saying? So for him it's just, how you say? This is a game, so therefore he's making the arrangements. They're dear to him, so he's making the arrangements. This makes some sense? Yeah. So in here then, if we're looking at it from, because we will tend to, why is this given here? Why are the answers given according to Narada, not according to Prickett Maharaj's question? Because Prickett is a devotee. He is an advanced devotee, so he sees top down. But we're not. We tend to always see bottom up. Does that make sense? So you could answer it the other way, and it would be a nice answer, and we'd appreciate it, but it wouldn't mean as much as starting from where we are with, here's matter, and then taking it to Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why then this approach would be used. Because factually, we have spiritual vision, we just have to agree to look through it, to see with it. But in dogmatically holding on to being the controller and enjoyer, therefore, how we'll see? Because if we see through it, then we'll see God's actually the controller and enjoyer, and I am enjoyed. So then, so much for my perception, right? So unless we want that, Krishna's not revealing that, right? In the Gita, he also mentions, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, right? Because he tells you to do what he does. Does that make sense? Krishna says, do your duty without attachment. That's what he does. He comes to the material world. He has no duty. But for relationship with the devotees, he performs duties. Right? So in the same way, he's asking us to do the same thing. We have no duties in the material world. The living entity has nothing to do here. But since you're here and identify with here, then like him, perform your duties for the benefit of the devotees. Right? Then you're on the same platform as him, so then you'll be comfortable living with him, right? You won't be comfortable being with someone who the nature is so different. Right? You're comfortable with people who the nature is similar. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then we're able to see if we see in the same way as Krishna. So what we're trying to get to is this other one, right? As we see Brahma, then he starts from Krishna down. But the question starts from down up. We make some sense here. So basically what is trying to be, one of the elements to be brought out is we simply have to uncover our natural Krishna consciousness. But we have to be agreeable to that. That's the whole point. The reason that it's we're in the condition we are is because we're not agreeable. As practicing devotees, we are at least intellectually agreeable, right? And in the heart, we would like it to be like that, but at the same time as I'd like that, but, a little later. So I was seeing one thing is that, somebody had moved on to the next realm, and they said, yes, I'll be there, and we'll be together there. But before then, I have a little bit of something here to take care of, like that, a little bit to enjoy here. So there'll be a little delay before we're back together again. Does that make sense? So even if that's in the heart, but we still have all these other important things to do. Does that make some sense? So then, even though the potential is there, and intellectually what we want, then we find that sometimes the heart has other priorities. So then it's a matter of, in these nine cantos, then we remove those priorities. So that the tenth canto, there are no other priorities than Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. Parishishtam. Vinodakam, or interest of special items of special interest for those students enrolled in full time in this Bhagavatam course. Jiva Goswami Satsandarbhas. In Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 42, Srila Jiva Goswami comments on Bhagavatam 2:5:15-16. Compare this to Srila Prabhupada's purports to the same verses. Anucheda 42. 1. That devotional service is the conclusion of all Vedic scriptures is also confirmed by these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2:5:15-16. The Vedic literatures are made by and are meant for the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also meant for serving the Lord as parts of his body. The different planets are also meant for the sake of the Lord, and different sacrifices are performed just to please him. All different types of meditation or mysticism are meant for realizing Narayana. All austerities are aimed at achieving Narayana. Culture of transcendental knowledge is for getting a glimpse of Narayana. And ultimately salvation is entering the kingdom of Narayana. Oh, this is that famous Narayana Vyakti. Yeah. Nimesha. The purpose of jnana, Brahma jnana, is to know Narayana by first learning about the similarities between ourselves and Brahman. Right? Because when you take things apart, then the tendency, if we're talking relationships, because the intelligence will do two things. It will dissect things, it will put things together. Right? So when we dissect things, and the mind will accept and reject. Okay? Now, if we look at what's happening here, when we dissect by the intelligence, generally that would connect more with the rejection by the mind. And when we find the similarities in the intelligence, we find the acceptance of the mind. You understand? So if you want to create relationships, you find similarities. If you want to break relationships, you find all the differences. Does that make sense? So therefore, that the material energy, that's why Shankya is important. One may say, like Maharaj was pointing out, is it may be seem boring and very tedious, but actually it's what it's doing is it keeps taking the material energy and breaking it down. So it starts to break our attraction, right? And you start finding the similarities between yourself and the Lord, right? So that you start to develop the relationship there. So it is boring because it doesn't have the relationship aspect, right? But that's the whole point, is that the relationship is supposed to be with Krishna. So, in an, if someone is naive, naive or neophyte, then let's say, okay, you're in your house, and okay, the guy is the same size as you in the house, fight and yell and scream and all that, okay. But the people that are bigger than you, which are your mother and father, they're always nice and caring and taking care of you. So then, first time out of the house, any big people you see, they think they're going to be nice and caring. But they may be, they may not be. So then the parents have to teach, no, there's a difference. Right? You have to be able to tell. So in the neophyte stage, you can't tell the difference. So in the same way as the living entity being Shakti is attached. So we're attached to material energy. And from that, trying to gain our existence and our happiness. Right? Does that make sense? So then, because of this, we can't necessarily tell the difference between spiritual and material. Right? So there is the need to constantly break down that attachment to the material so that we start to see the spiritual. Because otherwise, does that make sense? How that works? So it seems tedious because it's unnatural for the soul to be dealing with something that's not actually rasa. Right? It's just like when men really get into technical talks, you see at that simultaneous moment, the women lose absolute interest in the conversation. Right? Because there's no relationship there. You know, you start talking about, you know, this carburetor and that carburetor, but this one has these valves and that and that and more airflow. It's like, well, where's the rasa? Okay, technically it's correct. But you're breaking, you know, this one and that one and so many different, but it's intellectual. There's no emotion involved. Right? So then, so the point is the living entity, because it's feminine, has a tendency to lose interest in these technical things because of that. But that's okay if your rasa, the taste, is all Krishna. But then we see is jivas, such as Jiva Goswami here, and Sukadev Goswami, and all these other great persons who are rasiks, because it seemed in connection with Krishna, rasa is there. So as long as we just see it as technical aspects of the material energy, we find it boring. Because we're starting with material energy, like Narad's questions. And ultimately we get to Krishna. But if you just like Parikit Maharaj, you start with Krishna, then he has his creation and all that, then there's some interest. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of our perception. If we switch our perception, then it starts to work. We don't switch our perception, then this is the medicine. But unfortunately the medicine is bitter, right? You take sugar. Even though this is sweet to Sukadev Goswami Prakrit Maharaj and all the sages, but to us it's bitter because of the jaundice of material existence. Does that make sense? So, therefore, one should not avoid these aspects that deal with these technical points of creation and all these, the Shankhya, right? I mean, third canto will be a similar thing, but within the storyline will be more prominent, so that'll make it more palatable, but still it'll be the same thing, you know. Then fifth canto again they'll be doing this. It's constantly done because we're trying to just, you know, lay open bare bones what the material energy is, so that we see that there's nothing there for me. Right? It's only in the combinations that we decide that something is there. But as soon as you break it apart, you lose your interest. So that has to be done. So it's like, it's medicine we need to take. It may not be palatable, but no one ever said medicine always tasted good. Right? Of course, maybe your mommy said that, but you know, the reality, when she tasted it, went, that was one thing. But when you tasted it, somehow or another, it wasn't, but it still has to be taken. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. For example, every Vedic mantra has three meanings. Now this is how to find similarity. The adhyatmic meaning is transcendental and is related to Krishna's holy name, which is Sarvanama, all names. Two, Adidaivik, okay. The secondary meaning related to the demigods. And then adibhautik, the meaning that can be seen with material eyes. So we see here's another form of this adiatmak, adibhautik, adidaivik. So this we can understand this is one of the major formulas that are used, Vedic formulas. Okay, example pertaining to Ganga. Bhagavat associates her with Tirthapada. Then you have Ganga Devi, and then you have the Ganges River, right? In other words, her connection with the Lord, how he pokes his hole through the universe and a drop of the Viraja comes through and all this kind of that. So you see that aspect. Then you see her as the demigoddess, who is, you know, the demigod that takes care of that particular element, energy of the Lord. And then you see, we can go out here and physically see the water. Does that make sense? So every verse has those three. So we see as the acharyas, depending upon what it is, sometimes the verse in the conversation is bringing out a particular one. And then the acharyas, as appropriate, will bring out the others as needed in the commentaries. Right? That's why the commentaries are so valuable. The ultimate purpose of the Veda is attainment of the adhyatmic or transcendental meaning. Brahma affirms this, Narayana para Veda. Right, so, in other words, that's why Narad's approach is important for us, because we're starting with the river Ganges, then we understand there's a personality Ganga who has a relationship with the Lord and then his eternal pastime. Does that make sense? So these are both valuable, just like in logic, sambandha abhideya prayojana, but in how the mind deals with that logic, actually processes it, sambandha prayojana abhideya, right? In thinking, feeling, willing. Right? So both are important. Does that make sense? Like that. From the one we understand what it is, but from the other we know how to get from here to that understanding. Yeah? Two. This verse means that because Lord Narayana is the supreme object of worship, therefore, he is the subject matter described in the Vedas. Here someone may object, quote, is it not so that the Vedas also describe other deities who are also worthy of worship? End quote. That is true. Therefore, this verse explains that the other deities, the demigods, are meant for serving the parts of Narayana's body, Narayanangaja. The different planets are also meant to attain his feet, and the different sacrifices are performed just to please him, Nimisha, and not to achieve heaven.
Yeah,
the go can go. These things are done to give a little pleasure to Narayana. Notice that. Through understanding the planetary systems, you attain his lotus feet. Right? That's also there. So these all have their direct connection. We just see planetary systems and boring and this one, that one. So no, these are you can attain the Lord's feet by understanding how the planetary, because they're situated at his feet. Right? These things are done to give a little pleasure to Lord Narayana. That is the meaning. Yoga, that is Astanga Yoga and Sankhya Yoga, Nimisha, i.e. Sankhya, Jnana, and Astanga, are means to attain him. The purpose of all these are to bring us to bhakti. Austerity, which means concentration of the mind, is a mean to attain him. Right here. Interesting, which means austerity, which means concentration of the mind, right? This is, I mean, just to caught me, is a very important definition. Because we generally say austerity meaning just the physicalness, but that's on the third level here, the bottom level, the adibhautik. Is that when, okay, I'm only eating once a day, or what I'm eating is only half as much as what I want, or what I'm eating has no taste, you know, like that. That's austere. But actually austerity is the focus. That's why it says the highest austerity for a Brahmin. It says the highest austerity for a Brahmin up to the ends of his nails means you can't get, means end of the nails is completely leaving the body, right? That's as much austerity that can be performed, even though he's sitting wearing a garland, is to study the Shastra and teach the Shastra. Right? Because the point is concentration.
The point's not physical suffering. If you're physically suffering, you focus, isn't it? So that's actually what we're trying to get. But for the fatheads, then it starts off with physical. It means we start off with the adibhautik, right? And then we're supposed to go from the adibhautik to the adidaivik and ultimately to the adiatmik, right? We see great personality, Hiranyakashipu and others like that. They start with the adibhautik, right? They stand on their toes. And they get to the adidaivik. They get to the demigods, right? And they get their blessings. And then, by some strange way, they get to the adiatmik, which means they are that. Right? But they were supposed to get to adiatic, meaning understanding Krishna. Does that make sense? So the point is if the focus is already on the adiatmik and seeing the adidaivik and adibhautik in relation to that, or the process of getting from there to the other, even though it's subtle, that's what you're trying to do. So if you need to use the physical, fine, it's usable. But if you don't, it's not necessary. Right? So that's why the austerity of the Brahman is to study and teach. Then he's focused. The austerity of the Kshatriya is to protect his citizens, because that means he has to focus on what to do to make them protected. The Vaishya, his austerity is generating economics and distributing economics. Right? And the Shudra is, without complaining, to assist others doing these three. Right? Because that takes focus. You understand? So this is actual austerity. Everything else out from this is generally a exaggeration of the adibhautik, or the physical, just so that you should be able to focus and come up to the level of the adidaivik and ultimately get to the adiatmik. Does that make some sense? Yes, no? The point is, we're pointing out austerity. Our idea of austerity may be different than how we generally think of it. Right? Austerity just means it's physically austere. No. Here, trying to focus on, like here, the Sandarbhas are on the second canto, that's the actual austerity. That's real austerity. So therefore, you can be living in a palatial house, and all, but you're studying. So like Sanatan Goswami is in his palace, right? He's the prime minister of East India, right? The Nawab of Bengal. In those days, Bengal included, you know, North Orissa, Bangladesh, Assam, and all those seven states up there, right? That was Bengal. So that's very big. You know, I mean, it's one of the most populated areas in India, like that. In 82, at the official census, there was 100 million people in Bengal, right? And at that time, I think there was like 800 million or something in India. So it's like one-eighth. So it's like most popular. Then you add in Bangladesh at that time was 90 million. And then you add in all those others. So that would have been 200 million just East India. That was in 82, right? And, you know, they've been very active since then. So many years later, we have a few more million. Does that make sense? So he's the prime minister of that state. So you can imagine his facilities. So what was he doing? He was being very austere by sitting with 30 Brahmins and studying Srimad Bhagavatam. That's austerity. Does that make sense? Yes or no?
Yes.
Because austerity is supposed to do what? Okay, you do physical, physically disturbing actions. What is it? What is the result of that? What should it be? Just to be physically disturbed? You know? It has to give some result. So it may give you some prestige, others may go, wow. You know, but is that the real reason? No. The real reason is focus, concentration. And what's concentration supposed to do? Be focused on the Lord. So by concentrating on the Lord, that's real austerity. Like that. The physical may help it. If it does, great, but if it doesn't, it's not important. And if it's not needed, you can focus anyway. It doesn't matter. Ambarish was fully, he's given as the example of someone who who body, mind, and words is fully absorbed in the Lord's service. He was the emperor of the world. So you wouldn't say that it was physically austere. Isn't it? Does that make sense? Now do we understand what we're talking about? Yeah? Okay.
Austerity, which means concentration of the mind, is a means to attain him. Right? So in other words, it's supposed to get to him. And the culture of transcendental knowledge is a means to obtain him. What more need be said? He is the supreme goal, gatahi, to be obtained, the supreme Brahman. This is so because all things are manifested from him and dependent upon him. Therefore, Lord Matsyadeva said to Satyavrata, Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-38, "You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as Param Brahma, will be manifest within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me." So just by knowing him, everything will be learned. Was that, that one, was that famous verse that one who has full faith in Guru and Krishna, then all the imports will, of the Vedic knowledge will be understood. Right? Well, that's that Yasya Devi Parabhatir, Tasya Devi. Yeah. Hence, the pure devotee will actually realize Brahman. Yeah? So here we understand Brahman means Krishna. The first verse quoted here was spoken by Lord Brahma to Narad Muni. Okay. One thing just aside to appreciate a Jiva Goswami is you'll notice that there's actually between one point and the next there's no gap, right? So sometimes it's also hard to pick a point where you're going to make a comment because the logic and the progression is so perfect that one point just goes into the next where it's just it's complete. Like that, you know, Jiva Goswami is respected all over India by all the sampradayas. They all study his books because of his, you know, just his incomparable, you know, Sanskrit, like that. In Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda 29, Srila Jiva Goswami comments on 2.5.12.13. Compare this to Srila Prabhupada's purports to these verses. 1. That the material energy is ashamed even to approach the personality of Godhead is described in the following verses of Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.12.13, where Lord Brahma says to Narada, "I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the supreme controller. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine." In this verse, Brahma explains that because the material energy, Maya, is composed of the three modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness, she is contaminated and full of faults. The personality of Godhead, because he is spiritual and possesses eternity, knowledge, and bliss to the highest degree, is completely flawless. The contaminated material energy is therefore embarrassed to come within the energy. To come within the energy.
No, come within the vision.
Come within the vision is therefore embarrassed to... Oh, okay, so that part can be cut out. Yeah. To come within the vision of the supremely pure personality of Godhead. This verse explains that the material energy Maya is powerful enough to bewilder Lord Brahma and all other conditioned souls.
So we see something here is that just one would say, well, it's her job, this, that. But you see is that it's a matter of, when you're dealing with the feminine energy, it's a matter of support. Or anybody, it's just support. Like once there was, I think it was, I don't remember the background, whether it was, what was the reason behind it, but the application in the political sense that I can remember and bring out is that someone was sitting there and he would keep his grains way up high, you know, because you want to keep them out from all different kinds of living entities to come and bother your grains. So there was this pot or something was hanging up high, and there was this rat would come, and it would just jump an extraordinary amount and jump up there and get the grains and go back. And so he was thinking how to do this, and then he was contemplating, he understood he must, because it's confidence. He's got such confidence. Otherwise, how can he jump such a great amount? Other rats would be afraid. But without thinking, he just jumps that much. So then it was thought that, he has great support. So if we remove his support, he'll lose his confidence. And if he loses his confidence, he won't be able to jump and our grains are protected. So they went and found where his hole was and found he had a huge storehouse of grains, way more than most rats have. And so they just went in while he was out one day, took it all out. And then the next day, as they were sitting there, the rat would come to get the grains and he couldn't jump. He just couldn't do it. He was demoralized. Does that make sense? So that's the whole, and another example would be, Prabhupada mentions about you have the street dog. He has no support. So he's very humble. Stays out of the way, moves, this, that. But the dog on the leash with the owner, very proud, he has the support. He'll bark at anybody, growl, snap, bite. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is she's not actually directly connected to the Lord. So that confidence can't be had. So coming before the internal potency in Krishna, naturally she'll be embarrassed. Does that make sense? Because her support is Shiva. Right? So she'll be confident there. She says all kinds of things to him there and they have their particular rasa. Right? But when it comes to Krishna, she doesn't have that kind of support. So she cannot manifest the confidence of the internal potency. Does that make sense? So even though she is a servitor of the Lord and she does her duties, but at the same time as that confidence won't be there. She knows how to do her work. But that social confidence, so embarrassment is there. Does that make sense? Okay. Otherwise one would think, why would she be embarrassed? Because anytime you hear of Maya and Krishna, there's always this embarrassment, or she comes to take blessings from Radha and Krishna before she performs her duties. But it's always in a very, very humble mood. It's not like Uddhava walks in, and Krishna's there and the others and the kings and, Uddhava's here and it's very confident and a very high-powered, high-energy kind of interaction. No, here it's just very, very humble. She just comes because, Krishna's the supreme. Radharani is the source of her source. And so she's getting their blessings to perform her service. So it's done in a very, very humble mood. Does that make sense? That's why, on the other side, just as in austerity, is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he's talking about one of his essays, and he's talking about how is it that this person is so pompously sitting there on this seat and being respected by everyone else and pontificating on all these topics with great confidence. And so isn't this person like a very uncultured, debased, self-centered egoist like this. So, but he points out as no, because actually it's the Supreme Lord you're talking about. So that confidence and all that is not one's own confidence. It's a confidence because one is supported by the Supreme. Right? You can't get better support than that. Therefore, when those disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur were chased back from a program because they had so confidently, the two brahmacharis, right, and they just spoke out about, I think it was, our dear Bengali, spiritual heroes. Then the crowd got so upset that they actually physically chased them out of the Pandal program and back to the Mott. But he was proud of them because they had the confidence to say that in front of that crowd that easily could have created, if you know a Bengali crowd, you don't want to be near it. So, but that confidence came from just the commitment to order of Guru and Krishna. That's the boldness in preaching. Because it's not us. Krishna is perfect. Guru's order is perfect. Therefore, we can be so bold. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here all the time. And then we'll continue on Monday.
Ki
Jai. Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.